Hey, my name is Nicholas Williams. Everybody knows me as Kiko, but I was born Nicholas Williams. Kiko is kind of like a built-in alias. I was raised by a couple hippies, and for 9 months they had an argument about what my name was going to be. My mom thought I was going to be a businessman, so she named me Nicholas. She won the argument, but I never heard my parents. I mean, I know at some point when I was two, they were probably calling me Nicholas. But like my entire life of remembering, all I remember being called is Kiko. Anyway, I was born in Austin and I was raised in a little town called Brenham, Texas. And Brenham was just like everything you'd think of a small town. Like it was really cliquish, I guess would be a good word for it. And so, like I was raised by two people that weren't from Brenham. Everybody that was from Brenham was like really tight-knit from Brenham, German ancestors, beer drinking town. And so when I was growing up, like I didn't understand why, like I wasn't picked for All-Star baseball. I wasn't, like everything that I did that was a Brenham custom thing, Mayfest, All-Star baseball, like any of that stuff was I didn't get to do any of that because I wasn't from there. But yeah, my upbringing was pretty sheltered, I would say. I remember like my parents would like whenever there were boobs on the movie, they would cover my eyes. I remember that. Like they like for being two pot smoking, pot dealing parents, they were really good at playing the straight card, and so yeah, my whole life, like I had a really I mean, looking back on it, I had a really good upbringing at the time in the moment when I was a kid, and my dad was deaf, so he was like always really loud, and until I was about 25 years old, I thought he was really abusive. And now that I've got a 2-year-old of my own, I totally understand why he was probably as abusive as he was. 'Cause I mean, if I was anything like him, like he was just doing what he had to do to get by, man. But yeah, so my whole schooling took place in Brenham up until I was about 16. Like growing up, I played all the sports. I did all the extracurricular things. And when I became an adult, my dad may put it to me, and I realized like everything I had done was thanks to them selling weed. They sold weed like my whole life. And like when I turned 13 and I got caught smoking weed, like they had the decision of what to do about it, and their decision was, well, you can smoke, but you can only smoke with us, and like in hindsight, I don't think that was a good idea. Like at the time, I thought it was had the coolest parents in the world, so like from the time I was like 13 to like almost 15, like I was like a little pothead that was like one of the guys, I was like that hippie dude that's like, man, I'm only gonna smoke weed, man, only natural stuff, I'm never gonna put anything in my body that's not natural, And when I was about 15, one of my friends introduced me to cocaine, he kind of tricked me into it because he was like, man, it comes from a plant, man, And so like, I didn't I was 15. I didn't really question it, and like I liked it, And that ultimately led to what was the worst. Well, I mean, is it really worst? It ultimately led me to meth, And like, so like when I was 15 or 16 years old, I had a friend that was like in their 30s that thought it was a good idea to teach me how to cook meth. And so, like, 15, 16 years old, we're like jumping in fields, like stealing anhydrous, cooking meth. And probably wasn't a good look. But so, yeah, I really just dove head first into meth. And And I don't know, probably about eighth grade, whatever age that is, I got put on a Ritalin and Adderall. And I really feel like I probably wouldn't have taken to meth like I did if I wasn't on Ritalin and Adderall, you know? Like I ended up like abusing it. Like I would fake take it, you know, I'd put it under my tongue when my mom would give it to me and I'd spit it out and I'd save it all up for a month. And at the end of the month, I'd crush it all up and snort it. And, so whenever I actually got into the meth, like it was pretty much the same thing. But yeah, so like around 15, I started running away a lot, and I was probably a runaway for the longest I was gone was like 9 months solid of no contact. My parents had no idea how to get a hold of me. And I would just like, you know, like it started in little increments. Like I'd be gone for a week and I'd show back up and they'd let me come home, and I'd be gone for a month and I'd show back up and they'd let me come home. And then I was gone for 9 months. And, when I came back, my mom was like, look, I need you to stop doing this. Like you're tearing us apart. And, she was like, I'll withdraw you from school. Just stay home with me, get a job, you know, but we can't do this anymore. And so I decided to do that. Like by this time I turned 16, and, so I'd been home probably about a week, and I started working. My dad's friend had a janitorial service, and we were doing like a 12-hour gig where like we stripped and waxed an entire high school. And so we got done at probably, I don't know, about 10:30 at night. And I called my mom. We were leaving Carmine, which is about 20 minutes from Brenham. And I called my mom and I was like, hey, I'm on my way home. And so between the time I called her when we were leaving there and the time I got home, when I got home, my parents were gone. And come to find out, my mom got off the phone with me, hung up the phone, turned around, tripped over the dog and like broke her ankle, had a compound fracture on her ankle. Like her foot was twisted all the way around. And, she was in the hospital. And so like, she was also a type 1 diabetic. She had to take insulin from the time she was 7. And so those two things compounded, and she ended up, long story short, she ended up being put in a diabetic coma, or in a induced coma. And so like that was pretty traumatizing. And for the next, I'd say a good 6 months, like we weren't sure my mom was going to make it, you know? And she developed ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome. And they were telling us like, there's only a 34% chance of her survival. And she ultimately beat it. And so she was in the hospital here in Austin, and she got out and went to my grandma's house, and they gave me the opportunity to come here to Austin to stay with my grandma and to go to school here and kind of help my mom out. And I came up here and I was in school here for a couple months, and I started the running away shit again just because I didn't like being told what to do, I guess. I don't know. I don't really have a good excuse for it. But so I was doing the runaway shit again, and she, I ended up getting sick and I got the flu. And so I was staying with her at my grandma's between the running away, and she ended up taking care of me, and she ended up getting the flu, and the flu turned into pneumonia, and pneumonia turned back into ARDS. And, she was also on the diabetic pump, which, where there's like a shunt that's permanently in you. And she didn't really understand how to clean it. And that sent like a cyst to her heart, and she ended up having 6 heart attacks. And then the cyst moved to her brain, and she ended up having a bunch of strokes. And so like New Year's Day, 2001, New Year's Eve, 2001, I was dead set on going to this rave. Like we were we were downtown Austin in the hospital anyway. And I was dead set on going to this rave. And I didn't know at the time that we were planning on pulling the plug on my mom the next day. And so, like, I was dead set on it because, you know, like, all this shit with my mom, it was just, you know, I was 16, 17 years old, and it was just a lot for a 16 or 17 year old. And so I was going to, you know, the rave was right around the corner. I was just going to go for a couple hours and come back. And my dad was like, if you go, I'll disown you. And, so I didn't go. And like, I was dead set on disowning my dad, you know? And then the next day came and we unplugged my mom and like, I held her hand while she died. And like, I just, it fucked me up, man. Like it, and like, I didn't, at the time, I kind of dove way deeper into drug use. Like it was, you know, like there was pretty much, if you had it, I would do it. And, I mean, all my friends were like I had a lot of my friends that I'd had my whole life that kind of just stopped messing with me because they thought that I was trying to kill myself. And I mean, like, you know, like looking back on it, like I guess I was, you know, like I never, it wasn't until years later that like the thought was in my head that like, you know, like I could kill myself with drugs. I was just like, you know, like trying to fucking kill the pain, you know? And that, like holding my, like sometime in the time that I was 16 and home to the time that she ended up in the hospital, like she had asked me to start going to church with her. And so I was like, at first I begrudgingly went to church with her and I was just going because my mom asked me to. And then I kind of got something out of it. And so fast forward to when she died, like, you know, like that time I was going to church, like I never really prayed for anything because I never really needed anything. And so when she was on her deathbed and I was praying and ultimately she died, like I took that as like God murdered my mom. And so like it really fucked up my view on God for a long time. Like, and I mean, like, ultimately, like it was like the biggest hurdle whenever I got sober was the God thing. And but anyway, so like, you know, like in my, from like 17 to 25, like when I was 17, I had a friend whose stepdad was in a band, and he had seen me messing around on guitar and heard a bunch of songs I'd written. And he asked me to join his band. And so like, that was like the one thing I had going in my life that was keeping me somewhat motivated to, you know, not just like die on drugs, I guess. But so when I was 24, the band kind of imploded. Like our front man, the friend's dad had, who was also somebody I was making meth with. He ended up getting arrested and doing like 8 years in prison. And so like, then, you know, like I took that as another slight, like, you know what I mean? Like I looked at God, like he killed my mom. Then I looked at God, like he killed my band, you know? And it wasn't until I got sober that I started looking at God, like he kept me alive, you know? But, so like I was 24, I was living in Houston. I ended up using up every resource that I had there and, coming back to stay with my dad. And, when I came back to stay with my dad, it was basically, I was, selling weed for my dad is the context that I came back to stay with my dad. You know, like all my friends from high school now were hitting him up for weed. So he would be going to get weed and I would stay at home and make all his deals for him. And like, it became basically like the family business. Like it was what he taught me, you know, and it's, I don't know, man, now that I'm my dad, I would never do that to my son. Like, especially like, I guess if I hadn't got sober and I hadn't, you know, and I didn't look like it, if life had gone good, I can't say that I would say that. But, you know, like going through the downward spiral that I've gone through, I can say, no, I would never do that now. But so, you know, I was staying in Brenham with him, and he sold his house and moved to Columbus. And so I kind of bounced around Brenham for a year or two. And I was in a really, really toxic relationship, and I ended up getting arrested, and I got on probation, and I started going to probation. And it was like every time I didn't change anything. All I was doing was dope. And, every time I would get up to go to probation, my girlfriend would wake me up and give me the pipe. And, you know, like it was, all I did was fail piss tests. All I did was, not pay my fees, cause all I did was drugs, you know? And so I ended up doing about 6 months in state jail. And, so I get out of state jail and I come to Austin, you know, and like for the 6 months in state jail, I convinced myself that, I was going to totally change everything, you know, like I'm done doing this crap, because all this crap does is get me in trouble, you know? And, when I got out of state jail, like all my stuff was in my buddy's house, and my friend picked me up and we go to my buddy's house. And while I was in state jail, he came to visit me, and when he came to visit me, he was really high, and he was like, dude, I got some of the best dope I've ever had. And I was like, you really suck right now, you know? And he was like, no, man, I'll save it for you. And so when I got out, you know, like for 6 months, I've been telling myself, like, I'm done with that shit. Well, whenever I get out of jail, I go to get all my stuff from my friend's house, and he had saved it for me. And he gives me a bag of dope. And it was like, you know, like the whole 6 months of I'm not doing this, like totally out the window. You know, it was like immediately, like less than an hour out of jail, out of prison. Not out of jail, out of prison, and back to the races, you know? And so I came to Austin, and when I came to Austin, I was living with a friend. I was doing the same shit. I ended up getting pulled over and getting arrested, and luckily all I had was some paraphernalia. And so, like, you know, like, hadn't been out of jail more than a month. And right back in jail, doing a month in jail. And I got out, and, you know, like my friend had moved, and where I moved, I couldn't move with her because it was like her and her kids and her ex-husband in like a 2-bedroom apartment. And it was like, I didn't know what I was going to do. So I went and stayed with my grandma up here. And, you know, like for a little while, I wasn't totally just doing nothing but drugs, but it was more out of like respect for my grandma's house. And, I ended up going to a meeting at Cherry Creek with a lady that was, the secretary at, Sunrise Community Center. Somewhere that I had gone to for food when I was on the street and stuff like that. And she took me to a meeting. Like, she didn't tell me at the time that she was taking me, but she took me to pick up her 2-year chip. And so for about a month, you know, like I was going from my grandma's to down to like my grandma's almost in Pflugerville. I would ride the bus 2 hours, go to Cherry Creek almost every day, and 2 hours back. And like I thought I was doing AA because I was going to meetings, you know, but I was just going to meetings. I hadn't done anything like getting a sponsor. I hadn't done anything like doing the steps. And so when it came up, and, you know, and at the time I hadn't fully given over to the fact that I'm an alcoholic first. Like, I was in AA, and when I'd go to a meeting, I would say I'm an addict, because I didn't realize, like, when I drink, I do drugs. And so after about a month, somebody invited me to a launch party for a whiskey company. And I was like, well, I'm not an alcoholic. I can drink, you know? And so I ended up drinking a bottle of whiskey, and I ended up getting some dope, you know, and I was back to the races. And so, because I was living in my grandma's house at the time, I decided, like, I'm not going to live at her house and be full on into drugs like I was. So I decided I was going to go live on the streets, you know, like I was working. And so for 40 hours a week, I was at work. But, when I wasn't, you know, like, I was just working, and every time I would get paid, I would spend all my money on dope. And, I would spend all my money on dope, and then I would trade my dope for stuff like a new tent and like a nice badass Bluetooth speaker. And so, like, you know, like, I was camping, but I was like, I had a nice setup, so I thought I was doing okay, you know. And I thought I was doing the noble thing by not disrespecting my grandma's house, you know. And now that I'm 2 years sober, and I see that, you know, the noble thing is like being the best me I can be, you know, like to see that lady that, like, is the, my grandma's the only one that's still in my life that hasn't given up on me. And like knowing that, like, she's fucking proud of me, like, that shit, it's one of the best feelings I've ever had. It's better than anything drugs have ever given me. I'll tell you that. But while I was on the streets, I got arrested with a whole lot of dope, like way more dope than I should have had. And, so I did about a month in jail. And when I got out, it was like, it was Easter Sunday. It was right before Easter Sunday. And my cousin, who has like 30 years sober, she was at Easter. And I didn't realize the time she had 30 years sober. I didn't really know a whole lot of my family too well, because I was never really there. But she came up to me and she was like, hey, I can help you, but I can only do so much. You know, like, I can put you on the path, but you've got to walk the path yourself, you know. And she got me a bed at Project Helping Hands in NA24. If anybody knows anything about that, like, that place is the start of my journey this time around. Like, that place saved my life, man. But so I went there, and I was there for about 3 days, and they came and told me one night, like, tomorrow morning you're going to Austin Recovery, you know. And so, like, when I came into Austin Recovery, like, I was fresh off the street. Well, I guess I was fresh out of jail, but before that, I was fresh off the streets. When I was coming into Austin Recovery, I didn't give a shit about getting sober. Like, I was trying to beat a dope case. And it was like about 2 weeks into it whenever I just started, you know, like listening to Chris Gates talk, and, you know, knowing, like, in my mind, I used to be a musician, and he definitely used to be a musician. And so, like, hearing this guy that was like, you know, like, I know how hard all the musicians I've partied with party, and, like, hearing him put it in a way that's like, digestible, I guess, really kind of flipped the switch for me. And it was like, you know, like, it went from being, I'm going to beat this case, to, like, I'm going to give it a year. You know what I mean? And, like, if push come to shove, if I don't make it a year, if I do make it a year and after a year I want to do drugs, like, what's the worst that can happen? And the night I got out, I went to the Thursday night meeting, and I got a sponsor. That Saturday I did my fifth step. That next Saturday I was on my ninth step. Like, you know, like, I, within a month or so of getting out of rehab, like, I was, like, through the steps. And I really feel like the amount of progress I made in the first year was 100% due to how quickly, like I pushed myself to get through it, because, like, it was like I, you know, like, the whole God thing, like, was, like, fucked with me, like, my whole adult life, you know. Like, I was 35 whenever I decided to get sober. And, like, from the time I was 17 to the time I was 35, like, you could not have convinced me to do a third step, you know. And, like doing, you know, getting out of jail and going to Easter. At Easter, my cousin basically telling me she can save my life, you know. And one of the days I was in NA24, I went to court and they reset me, and I get on the bus. And, you know, when I'm going back to NA24, I just kind of said a prayer to God, like, thank you for still being there. And, like, as I'm saying this prayer, on the side of a building, in one of the buildings downtown, it says proof, you know. And, like, it was like little shit, I mean, or big shit like that, like, really kind of sold me on the God piece, you know. And so yeah, I, when I was almost out of treatment, my lovely fiance happened to show up, and she was 6 months pregnant, you know. And like, that whole thing is a big part of, like, the God thing for me, because, like, she didn't know I was in there. I didn't even know she was still pregnant. Like, you know, like, when we got pregnant, like, we were both on drugs. We were both on the streets. Like to see her, like, come in there looking healthy, like, you know, wanting to do right, and, like, wanting to do right for, you know, like, when I saw her, the first thing she said to me was, like, it's a boy, and I think he's going to save my life, you know, like. And when she said that, like, I felt like he was going to save my life too, man. And, you know, like, people will tell you, like, you can't get sober for your kids. And I didn't get sober for my kid, but I can tell you one thing, like, he definitely helps me stay sober. Like, I mean, doing the work helps, but, like, knowing that, like this little kid fucking looks up to me and, like, copies the shit out of me makes me, like want to be the best person I can be, you know? But yeah, so I got out, and I got through the steps. I went into sober living for about 6 months. And when she had the baby while she was in AR, so, like, me, my fiance, and my baby are all alumni from Austin Recovery. It's pretty freaking awesome. Like, he had an alumni onesie and everything. It was awesome. Yeah, man, like, today, I don't do enough in my program, if I'm being 100% honest. You know, like, when I had 90 days sober, I had four or five sponsees. Like, truth be told, I only got one person through the program ever. And that kind of, like, put me in a position where I felt like, you know, maybe I'm not doing it right. And so I kind of, like, taking a step back from sponsoring people. But, like, yeah, I know, like, today, like, I know I could be doing more. And, like, that's the beauty of this program is, like, you know, like, I, even whenever I was doing it and I was in it, I still felt like I could be doing more. So now that I am not doing it as much, I definitely feel like I could be doing more. But, like, I don't know, I'm grateful for everything about recovery, Austin Recovery, being able to, like do shit, like the fact that my grandma's in a nursing home now, and she's not allowed to have people come and see her, but she's allowed to get packages. And, like, so, like, and I work at a coffee company. So, like, to be able to send my grandma a package and send her 2 pounds of coffee a week, Like, that shit's fucking awesome, man. Like, you know, like when I was on the streets, like, there is no way I would have been able to, you know, like, and that's nothing. That's what's so amazing about it. Like, it takes so little effort to be able to go and send my grandma a package and her to be able to call me and be like, this coffee tastes so great. Like, but like, to be able to be that fucking grandson, you know, like, I'm so grateful that I was, you know, like, my mom died when I was 17. My dad died when I was, you know, 30 something in the midst of a total meth addiction. And so like when I first got sober, like, I was kicking myself because, like, you know, like, my parents, like, both totally, totally loved me, and I did nothing but shit on them, you know? And I'm so grateful that, like, my grandma's still here, like, she doesn't even have to tell me she's proud of me. I can hear it in her fucking voice, man. Like, you know, like my friends I've had for 20 plus years that, like, saw me at my worst. It's like, I know, like, I am an entirely different person now because of this program. Like, I know, like even today, like, I was being an asshole. I don't know if you're on here, Constance, but if you are, I'm sorry. But, yeah, I was being an asshole. And, like, you know, like, I'm grateful that, like, I can be told I'm being an asshole, and that doesn't make me be an asshole more like it used to. You know, it used to be like, if you told me I was an asshole, I'm going to show you asshole. You know what I mean? And like now, like, she can tell me like, you're being an asshole, and I can be like, I'm sorry. You know, like that's awesome, man. Like it AA, NA, all this shit is about so much more than not doing drugs. You know, like, I know, like the whole getting high thing, like, that shit was easy okay, I'm not gonna say that was easy to stop, because it was very difficult to stop, but that was the easy part, you know, like the looking at myself, holding myself accountable when I am fucking up, like, stepping up and being like, hey, I'm sorry, like, fuck, man, like, but saying I'm sorry is so much easier when you're not high, too. I don't know, man. I feel like I'm just rambling. Did I go long enough, Chris? Can I wrap it up now? Is that okay? Are you still here, Chris? I'm good. Well, then I'm good. Thank you for letting me share.